everyone. Welcome to the Psychology of Games podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jamie Madigan. In this podcast, I examine topics at the intersection of psychology and video games, often with the help of a guest expert. This is the episode about the relationship between moral reasoning and moral development and playing video games. Don't forget that you can go to psychologyofgames.com to find hundreds of articles that I've written about the intersection of psychology and games. You can also find out how to follow me on social media, how to get your hands on the books that I've written about this topic, and how to support me on Patreon at patreon.com/POG. So, as I've said before, you probably don't need me to tell you that video games can sometimes attract a bad reputation. For causing violent behavior, for causing compulsive play, for rotting your brain when you could be doing more productive things. And I've written about all those misconceptions and talked with podcast guests about how games can actually be good for developing certain skills and having certain experiences that would otherwise be closed off to us. Yay, games! One of the areas where games might have gotten a bad rap, though, is around moral development and moral reasoning. That is, I've heard the criticism that games and movies and television, etc., that they corrupt youth's morals by exposing them to situations and characters that are either clearly morally bad as role models or, at best, too morally complex for kids to understand and react to. Maybe some adults, too. Age ratings aside, a lot of kids get a hold of games that present morally complex situations, characters, and choices. And that kind of suggests the question, can playing certain games help kids develop their moral reasoning skills? That is, one's ability to understand the complexities of moral or immoral behavior and to be able to explain why they're moral or immoral? Is there some sort of link between being exposed to that sort of thing through games and moral development? And if so, what kinds of games and what kinds of play and what kinds of people? Can games help you develop your moral reasoning skills? Well, those are the kinds of questions that I'm going to explore in this episode with the help of a guest expert. All right, everybody, welcome to the interview portion of the podcast. My guest this episode is Dr. Sarah Hodge. She is a senior lecturer in psychology at Bournemouth University. Her PhD research explored morality in real life and virtual contexts. Since completing that PhD, her research interests have continued to explore morality in real life and virtual contexts, along with other factors, including gender, as well as supporting young kids and children with technology use, and that includes gaming and gambling. So, Dr. Hodge, Sarah, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you here.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Yeah. So the thing that I wanted to talk about and that had kind of caught my attention were a couple of papers that you were involved with, along with your co-authors, who look like Jackie, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. Taylor and John McAlaney.
Yep. McAlaney. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That were about the correlation or the relationship between moral development. And we can talk about what that is in terms of developmental psychology. Amongst, I think it was initially adolescents and their video game use or how much they play and what kinds of things they play, and then extended that research to look at the sort of the same questions amongst older kids, college age kids at university. So I thought those papers were interesting, and I think it's particularly, it's like an evergreen topic, right? Because video games have reputations and sort of, do they rot your mind? Do they interfere with development? Do they take time away from things that you would be better served doing? Sort of an age-old question that's been applied to things well before video games came onto the scene, going all the way back to like novels and books and so forth. But what is this concept of moral reasoning and moral development that you kind of wanted to look at the relationship between that and video games?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for taking an interest in the research. It was obviously, being a psychologist, we learn a lot about moral development and this idea that we go through these stages. And I was really curious to know if the stages of development would relate to gameplay. Obviously, it's not causation, it's correlation. But I was always curious about whether there could be a relationship between the two. That's sort of where the research came from.
And what is moral development in the, or moral reasoning in this context? Like, what does that mean?
So this was put forward, this comes from quite a traditional theory in psychology it was from Kohlberg, that we go through stages of moral development, and he focused on moral reasoning. And when they talk about moral reasoning, that's basically our moral thinking. So when we're thinking about something, making a decision, understanding why we might think something, that's called the reasoning side of morality. So, and they were saying that in the theory that you should see these clear stages of development coming through in someone's reasoning ability.
And what are, like, what's the earliest stage? And is there like a terminus? Is there like a point where somebody is like, yes, congratulations, you're finished, achievement unlocked, you've completely developed your moral reasoning?
Well, this is a really nice example of how, so Kohlberg had the theory originally, and then some other authors took it on. So it was Gibbs and a few others, and actually made it into a measure of moral reasoning, because he only had the theory. Kohlberg put the theory forward, but they actually developed a measure, Gibbs and the others, and they found that it was the first two stages, because in total, Kohlberg put across three stages of development. But they found that the final stage didn't actually translate very well into a stage of development. They actually found the final stage of moral reasoning was more like somebody understanding morality in a very deep way and a very abstract way. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just a stage, it was more of an understanding that went a bit beyond the basics. So in the measure we used, although it was based off Kohlberg's stage theory, it only had two stages. So it was looking at what they called immature reasoning and mature reasoning is how they defined it and measured it.
So what would differentiate somebody at those two different levels who are looking at the same question of, because I assume it's like moral reasoning involves like looking at something and deciding whether or not it's moral, whether or not it's right or wrong. And exactly. So what would differentiate somebody at those two levels of somebody at level one, a very basic, and somebody with more highly developed reasoning?
You're exactly correct. Like if we were going to ask somebody about their moral reasoning, we give them a question and they have to tell us why they think something's important. That's part of the measure. And then we analyze what they've written. I have to be completely honest, when I saw this measure, I was quite skeptical and I thought, but how do we know that participants would actually say this? Like, are we actually going to see this come through? I was actually quite skeptical to begin with, because they would argue, for example, if you ask somebody why keeping a promise is important, they would sort of react a certain way and sort of use certain words to describe it. So early stage reasoning would be things that are very absolute, like if you break a promise, this will happen, and it's very consequence focused. And believe it or not, some of them is like, you will go to jail. You know, if you break a promise, you will go to jail. So it's that absolute, right? And you'll get the punishment. And I actually saw some of these come through. And I was obviously the younger participants actually wrote, you would go to jail. And I was so surprised to see the word for word reasoning coming out in certain examples. So that was an example of sort of the more immature reasoning. But as it becomes more mature, it moves away from the absolutes. So it starts to come a bit more abstract, and they understand that it might, some things might happen. And it's more about understanding the social situation. So would other people disapprove? You know, how would other people feel? Acknowledging the sort of circumstances around, the fact that, you know, it might change depending on what else is going on in the situation. And then the top reasoning was around understanding the societal impact. So if everybody broke promises, then obviously society would struggle to function because nobody would ever be able to make contracts with each other.
Right. Yeah. And it does very much sound like the difference between a child, although I know plenty of adults that seem stuck in that earlier like mode of thinking of these are the absolutes. This is the, you know, you can't do this because it is known, or because it's, I say so, or because authority figures will punish you. And the more sort of sophisticated thinking about it, like, well, it depends, right? There's circumstances, there's thinking about consequences and maybe there's gray areas and so forth. And mm-hmm. so it sounds like you would expect that's a progression that mm-hmm. As people get older, they get more sophisticated in their moral reasoning and they start to tend towards, if we're lucky, if society and the people around them are lucky, they tend to move into those other more sophisticated modes of thinking. So why did you suspect that moral reasoning might be affected or related to video game play?
It's a great question. I think where I was thinking, so obviously historically games have been highlighted with the aggression, as you've rightly said, you know, that concern has been in a lot of media, and video games had that time about aggression, and aggression is sort of connected to morality, and particularly the violent video games. If you're committing sort of these virtual violent acts, how does it relate to morality? So that was sort of one connection that I sort of was thinking about with the research. But the other one was also coming from the games themselves, because some games in particular do give players moral choices. Other games have moral themes in them. So it seemed mm-hmm. like there could have been a connection, and it was really trying to build on that previous research of finding out, okay, well, if there is something around morality, how can we understand it better?
That seems to imply that people are taking lessons from their video game play, or at least that it's affecting how they apply this moral reasoning to things outside of the game? Or were you only looking at what they did within a game?
Well, I think with the sort of the measure of moral reasoning, because it was their sort of the one they'd be using, the system they'd be using sort of for everything is the assumption, isn't it? Is that it's the kind
their
of the
world
one
view.
They,
yeah.
Yes, their worldview. Yeah, it's a nice way of putting it. That whether that had a relationship with gameplay. And obviously now I've done the research, there seemed to be that relationship with maybe being exposed to that moral content actually was sort of, in a way, helping them, even if it's just having that exposure. Because what I really liked about games is that they give you exposure to sort of moral scenarios that you don't necessarily get in many avenues. You know, if you think about real life or media, it gives you a very different way of looking at it. Sometimes you can get it from films, but actually games can go that step further and get you to then act and do something.
Yeah, and games are sort of unique. They're sort of unique in that they can branch, right? They can do different things depending on the choices you make and the moral reasoning that you apply.
Exactly.
Or they can. There's some games that are pretty straightforward, you know, Call of Duty or other shooters, Halo, et cetera. Those are all pretty much set. But then there's other genres like role-playing games, massively multiplayer games, where they very deliberately set up these moral choices and these moral dilemmas, which I have had podcast guests on and I've written about. And I find that stuff fascinating of like, how can you tinker with the presentation of that stuff and the content of the game and see how people react differently. So did you expect like different genres of games to affect people differently or be related to their moral reasoning differently?
We didn't look at that specifically beforehand. We did take a long list of different types of genre to sort of have a look at whether that might be the case. And it was really interesting. It wasn't necessarily which genres came out. It was more the number of genres they played. So if they had a variety of genres, that had the relationship with the higher moral reasoning. And I think what we think that was telling us was that it was like it's getting those different experiences. I think if someone's gaming and they're having lots of different types of games, different genres, different experiences, that seemed to be something that could be related to moral reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. So let's back up half a step. Like what was the study and sort of how was it structured and what did you do in the study?
So the study was, it was done through using the measure I mentioned with Gibbs, who took that sort of moral reasoning. And what you had to do in that sort of measure was you gave participants 11 questions where they had to answer. Each one had a different topic and they had to say why it was important or not. So it didn't really matter if they said it was important or not important. It was more the reasoning behind it. So they had to elaborate and give a reason why. And then you could score each of those questions with the sort of stage of development, depending on what they'd written. and that could give them an overall score.
You had some raters evaluate their reasoning.
That's
right. Their written reasoning, yes. And they had like a scoring guide that had been developed in previous research, I imagine.
Yes, all developed by Gibbs. It's a whole book you have to go through, and you have to be trained on it. You have to have examples, you have to go through theirs. It's quite an in-depth measure. It's a very unique measure. I really enjoyed it. It really wasn't what I expected it to be, because it's an unusual thing to do, at least from my experience. I've dealt a lot with questionnaires that don't have that sort of, you know, scoring what they're saying.
Yeah, usually they just maybe agree or disagree with statements on a Likert scale, 1 to 5 or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly, yeah. And you had to use your judgment to decide what they were trying to say. So you had to see if, you know, particularly because it was the written word, you had to sort of try and get the meaning out of it. So that took time to sort of get used to what are they trying to say, where would this fit, particularly if they were trying to sound moral, but they were just sort of making a vague statement.
And dressing it up with words, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So you had to watch out for those.
So you gave people this questionnaire and then evaluated their responses in this very systematic way. Mm-hmm. What else did you do in the study, and what else did you look at?
We looked at a lot of gameplay sort of questions. I really wanted to do that sort of deep dive into what they were playing, because, you know, as you know, because you're very familiar with gaming is so broad. People can do so many things that even if we just look at genre as one example, that's just one way people play. But, you know, there's also time, how often they play, who with, how they feel when they play the game. So like engaged, immersion, that kind of thing. We took a measure to see how sort of engaged and the sense of flow they got from it. So there was quite a lot. And I also got them to list favorite games as well, because that sort of can tell us what they might like, you know, what their preferences might be.
And what did you find out?
At the time, I found out that it probably shows you when the study was carried out, but GTA 5 was a very popular game. It came up.
Still is.
Yeah, it came up so much. In both sort of the school children and the college university sample, GTA 5 was very consistent. And we also found, sort of, obviously, with the genres, that they played quite a lot of genres. But there were a few sort of, I think Call of Duty was the other game that was very popular as well between both groups.
An evergreen game as well, yeah. And what about the relationship between moral development or moral reasoning?
What we actually did with the games, because they gave us their favorite games, we were using some of the PEGI and the entertainment rating board system to look up the content in these games. So we were looking up whether they had the violent content or whether they had the mature content in their gameplay. And what was interesting was that this wasn't significant, but we had this really interesting pattern. So it's a trend where the violent content had weirdly had a positive relationship with reasoning, but the mature content had a negative relationship. It was really surprising. What we think that could represent is actually when you think about violent content, if even going beyond video games, there tends to be a lot of violent content that people can be exposed to. You know, it's in films, it's on, you know, the internet. If you go on YouTube, it's something that people might come into contact with a lot more frequently. Whereas mature content, so sort of things of like a sexual nature as well, that is less sort of spoken about, that it's less available. And I think, you know, in some circumstances, so the exposure might be different. And I don't know whether that was kind of feeding into it.
Yeah. So mature content because violence seems like a mature content. Seems like there could be some overlap there. Is mature content just sexual in nature, or is it like talking about property taxes and, you know, like working your 9-to-5 job and planning for retirement? Is it that kind of stuff, or yeah. what was mature? Was it just based off the PEGI ratings?
Yeah, PEGI and the Entertainment Rating Board rating as well. So it was the SRB. Thank you. It was it's mostly sexual content, but it can be humor, adult humor. So it's typically the stuff you would get in films. It's that same kind of rating.
Drug use, smoking, drinking, that sort of stuff. I think you usually see flags for that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, yeah. And I think the violence is technically separate in those systems as well, so that it tends to be rated as something different.
So the name of the paper is It's Double-Edged, the Positive and Negative Relationships Between the Development of Moral Reasoning and Video Game Play Amongst Adolescents. What does that It's Double-Edged piece mean? Like, unpack that for me. What does that mean?
Yeah, it was basically when we were looking at the results and trying to look at the gameplay alongside sort of moral reasoning, it didn't seem so clear cut how the variables related to, because the gameplay obviously looked at lots of different factors. There were sort of positive things coming out. So the fact that if you played lots of different genres, it had a positive relationship, but then there was also some negative relationships that were coming out as well with some of the results. So that's why it was an interesting combination. It depends really what you're playing and how you're playing that might have the relationship with moral reasoning.
Which makes sense. Yeah. Mm. So the second, you did a follow-up study a couple of years later. So the first one was in 2019, I think. And this one was, it looks like next year in 2020, right? Mm-hmm. Both of them in Frontiers in Psychology. What was the purpose of the second study? What did it build on?
It was really interesting to find that where the sort of school children seem to have these relationships with the sort of video game play, whether that would continue, because with the theory that I was using that was based on Kohlberg, they say that actually moral development still continues at university, which always surprised me. So college students technically are still going through their stages of moral development. They might not be at the top. I mean, if you'd asked me when I was an undergrad, I would have thought my moral reasoning was developed. Yeah. I would have been shocked if someone said, no, you're still developing your moral reasoning.
Maybe a signal that you're not done developing if you think that you're done.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I found that quite interesting because I think a lot of people might hold that perception that, oh, your morality's developed, but actually it still goes through changes according to this theory. So I was really curious to know whether it would actually relate to the gameplay, considering it was going through that still going through those changes, whether we'd find those patterns.
And did you?
It was different. Yeah. So what was really interesting with the first study is that we could see a shift in moral development where they were going through the stages as they were progressing through the years of school, that depending on the age group, they had this shift and change. So we wondered, because the university students were still potentially developing their morality, whether we would see similar patterns, but that wasn't the case.
Hmm. So what did you find?
They just didn't have the same sort of relationships between moral reasoning and gaming. So we were suggesting that maybe gaming doesn't necessarily relate to their moral reasoning at that time, whether it's because of the gaming content itself, like maybe gaming content might challenge the lower stages of moral reasoning better. And maybe that we haven't actually got to a point where we can get it so we can challenge the higher stages. Our argument is that maybe potentially not everybody gets to the final stage. They can just stay in mature reasoning, but in the lower part of the mature reasoning. Right. So it could be that actually there's less variance because people haven't got those massive shifts they get when they're younger.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a straight linear relationship. It's or just not a normal distribution across time. Yeah. That's interesting in and of itself. So how do you think that your findings in all of this fit into like the larger discussion around the effects of playing video games and whether or not they're good or bad for us or something else entirely?
I think it shows that going back to the double edge, that actually there's some real positives that can come out of gaming. And I think it's just about knowing what those positives are and utilizing them. Like if we know it can get people thinking about morality, and giving them scenarios that they wouldn't be able to get in the same way that they would with other activities, you could really utilize this to get them involved in things. And I think for the younger ones, being mindful that they might be coming across things that are quite complex. You know, they were playing GTA 5. That's quite a complex game. The scenarios are quite complex for sort of an adolescent. As adults, we might view it differently, but for them, there could be a lot of information that they've got to take on in a moral context that we don't always think about.
Yeah, and I think I've seen reference to that about using video games and the scenarios that they present as like developmental tools or educational tools to help people understand the complexities of different types of situations. And it's not just all black and white, true or false, that it varies. And a lot of game developers and writers and auteurs like to play in those types of situations. So it sounds like you're saying that could be a valid use of games for that kind of purpose.
Yeah, I really agree. I think it could definitely, and it gives you that almost moral agency because it puts you in the situation as well. So I think mm-hmm. if you give people exposure, particularly when they're younger, it can really probably help them to understand, you know, what this might mean. And also seeing it, like playing it in a scenario, is a much more interactive way of seeing things than being just, you know, told a vignette or, you know, reading something. It brings it to life in a very different way.
But it also seems like there might be some complexities that are just beyond people that are still cutting their teeth and still developing. Like, you know, it's like having a kid watch Paw Patrol versus The Wire. You know,
yeah,
like
exactly.
There's one that's going to appeal to them and one that's going to be interesting to them and one that they're better off saving for a little bit later.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that, you know, there's so much information about the age ratings, and I think they're very useful because it does give you an indication of the content. And that can really help you make that judgment on whether that child is ready for that content yet. It can just give you that extra bit of guidance, I think, which is so useful.
Yeah. But at the same time, there's probably plenty of age-appropriate moral dilemmas and twists on types of things and decisions to be made that, you know, could be put into games.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like an expert, but my understanding is that the reason that kids shows are very repetitive and very simple and so forth is because that's sort of the level they're at and they like that kind of stuff. But so we're not talking about little kids, but like the children in your first study were adolescents. So were they in like what we would call middle school here in the States, or like what age range are we talking?
Yeah, I always have to look up the conversions. They started at 11 years old. So would they be in middle school? Yeah. So yeah, they were 11. Yeah.
Thereabouts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not talking like 5-year-olds.
We're no, talking that's about right. Yeah.
Preteens and early mm-hmm. teens, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Although the infants do interest me as well. I think it would be nice to get them doing, you know, similar research. The issue is the measure, when they get really young, you have to change it because obviously they're writing. Because they have to reason, mm-hmm. you have to record the reasoning slightly differently because they're unlikely to be writing it down if they're really small. I know one of the authors tried it on their 6-year-old and they said it worked, but obviously they had to do a lot of the writing of what they were saying, whereas the 11-year-olds were happy to type.
You could take dictation, I wonder, or, you know, have them talk instead of write.
Yes.
But even then.
Yes. Yeah. But it's a very different study then because the way you'd administer it would change, and it's getting into those age groups, but it's something that would be really interesting to do.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So where do you think this line of research should go in the future? You know, if you had a big grant come through for this and you were able to hire a bunch of grad students to be research assistants, and you had to like push this to the next level, where do you think it should go?
I'm really curious about how the games are going to develop and the technology develops with it. So even if we're thinking about virtual reality and VR, the way you do the actions in those games are much more physical. Like it's moving away from pressing a button to actually acting and actually becoming, you know, it's that again, it's almost that agency is becoming a lot more realistic. So it'd be really interesting to know if there are differences between like pressing a button versus actually acting it out with more body movements. Would be really, 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 really cool to know. And again, with the study with the younger age group, because they do play a lot of games. They're very interested in games as well. And it would be nice to know whether we could help support their moral reasoning with the stuff they mm-hmm. come into contact with.
Yeah, the VR stuff makes me think about the whole line of research around embodied cognition and grounded cognition, which is to say that our bodies, and especially the movements that we go through when we're doing something, affects how we think. So thinking about pressing a button is different from observing yourself, like reaching out, pressing a button, or swinging a sword, or, you know, carrying someone, or doing whatever it is that you do in these games. And VR often enhances that sort of embodied cognition. And I think it's kind of an under-researched area right now. You're right. We're not a whole lot of researchers are looking at what's the difference between pressing a controller button versus doing something much more actively? Or maybe they are doing it and I just haven't seen it. And they're out there right now saying, hey, actually, that was my PhD thesis or dissertation or what have you. In which case, let me know. Maybe we can talk about it. So what, besides this, what other kinds of research have you been doing or are you interested in, especially as they relate to video games or games in general?
Yeah, I mean, what's been a really interesting recent development, and it kind of connects to the kind of way technology's moving, is I've looked into sort of some of the overlaps gaming's got with gambling. So one of the sort of more publicized issues around that was around loot boxes. You know, the idea that these game features are having very much similarity. Some argue it is gambling, some don't. But the idea is that the kind of gap between gaming and gambling might be closing. And that, I think, is quite interesting as well, that what we might have seen is very separate. I think with technology sort of developing the way it is, I think things are becoming much more integrated.
Mm-hmm. Although a lot of games, at least the most popular ones, have moved away from things that look like loot boxes and moved more into season passes or battle passes. But there's still a lot of sort of the random elements to it. So it's less like literally pulling a gambling machine handle and seeing what happens. And I guess it's sort of an open question of are you just obfuscating that? Or is it truly different than the old days of 2 years, old days? I say them like they're forever ago, but I'm really talking 2 or 3 years ago when it did look a lot more what you'd do in a casino or more to the point, an online virtual casino.
Yeah. And it's a great point about how it's kind of emerged the way it has. And the fact it is that it can be very different, but just share those similarities. And it can be quite hard as a sort of a player, because these things can be quite subtle. It's not till you take that step back and think about it. You know, if you're a boring academic like myself and you want to understand these things, you know, you start to think, actually, that does seem to have these elements, that random chance, as you said, as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guarantee you that that shift has happened because researchers and outcry from the public about, hey, wait a minute, is this gambling? This seems a lot like gambling. And that's bad, especially when children are involved or people with problematic gambling behaviors are involved.
Yeah, and also experience as well. I think experience, I hear a lot from when I've looked into sort of how people felt about loot boxes and things. They didn't have very good experiences of the game because they weren't getting, you know, it was very difficult to get some of these items, and then the value of these items as well, how much they were paying. So I think it's also quite a general thing to think about the players and how they can get the most out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else you're working on? Any other research lines or publications?
Yeah, I'm also looking at the relationship with gender and moral reasoning, and that's in collaboration with Dr. Linda Kay as well. So we've been trying to look at whether
I know her. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you've interviewed her. But yeah, we were interested to know whether that would, if you knew, if you were assigned a particular gender identity, would that influence how you then make moral decision making? So looking at whether perceptions about gender might influence it.
Okay. Yeah. And we know from some research that people do or more likely to conform to what they think are the expectations of their gender or their race or their other aspects of their appearance in a virtual or video game context. So yes. I imagine you might find something there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And how much of it might be some of the kind of older stereotypes, you know, whether how much stereotypes can influence this as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. I'll look forward to that. Well, where can people go on the internet if they want to find out more about you and the research that you do? Is there any website or link or social media or anything you want to point out?
Yes, I do have a Twitter page. And I don't know if you're going to put the links in with that.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, perfect. So yeah, I could link my Twitter page. And also I've got a staff profile as well that has sort of access to the publications if anyone was interested in reading them.
Yeah. And I'll make sure to include those in the show notes that and the blog post that goes along with this episode of the podcast. But yeah, as always, people who find this sort of stuff interesting can go to psychologyofgames.com where you can find out other episodes of the podcast, how to subscribe to it if you're not already, so that you get every new episode delivered stealthily to your listening device of choice whenever it comes out. You can find, like I said, hundreds of articles that I've written about this stuff, information on how to purchase my books about the psychology and video psychology of video games, and how to follow me on social media. I'm at Jamie Madigan on Twitter, for example, and how to support me on Patreon. I'm patreon.com/POG for Psychology of Games, and supporters get ad-free versions of podcasts like these and then bonus podcasts, audio versions of the articles that I publish. So you can go there and check that out. So Sarah, thanks so much for coming on. This was interesting. Exactly the kind of stuff that I was hoping to explore with you after reading these articles. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the invite. It's been lovely talking to you.